Well, look with me briefly this morning at this proverb 31:10-31, praising the godly woman who fears the Lord. The literary form of this passage is what we call an alphabetic acrostic. Do you know what an acrostic is? I found one by John Piper. Mother. Mother is for the million things she gave me. O means only she's growing old. T is for tears 'twere shed to save me. H is for her heart, which is pure as gold. E is for the eyes with love always shining. R means right, and right she always is. Now that's an acrostic. It's just a mnemonic device, a memory device that helps us to remember things. And this was really big with the Hebrews. Today you say acrostic and people go, huh? We see them once in a while in a business slogan or on a license plate. And it has a meaning. It has a specific meaning to the person who composed it. Well, for the Hebrews, an acrostic was generally used for aid in memorization. And in this case, in this particular case, in this proverb, I believe that it was used to just pile up 22 elements of praise to this godly woman. The author of this poem, as one commentator suggests, strung together 22 pearls of praise to extol the woman of noble character who fears the Lord. I like that. 22 pearls strung together to give praise to the woman who fears the Lord, the woman who is extolled in this passage for all that she does. Scholars believe that this poem was written by King Lemuel, who we don't know who that is. Many believe that that's just a pen name, if you will, for King Solomon. Some suggest Solomon. Others believe that this was written by Solomon's mother, Bathsheba, or in this case, Lemuel's mother, who begins chapter 31 by extolling, ending this book with instruction on wisdom and how to look for a capable wife, the type of woman to marry. Ross, a scholar from Dallas Seminary that's written a lot in Psalms and Proverbs, I really like him. He has a lot of neat insights. He says that the wife in view here in this poem is a wealthy aristocrat who runs a household estate with servants and conducts business affairs. She deals in real estate, vineyards, merchandise, domestic affairs, and she is charitable. It would be quite a task for any woman to emulate the woman in this passage. And yet, we all got something to shoot for, don't we? The wife, mother in this poem is praised once again for her fear of the Lord, verse 30. Well, let's take a look at this little brief poem. The fact that this poem is written in the form of an alphabetic acrostic makes it extremely difficult to try to outline. So what I've done is I've followed others who have gone before me, and I've come up with an eightfold outline that breaks this little poem into eight stanzas. And each of those are just packed with praise for the godly woman, for the godly wife. In verse 10, the poem begins with a rhetorical question. An excellent wife, who can find? This question is intended to establish the point which the author wants us to really consider, that an excellent, noble type of wife or woman is a rare find. We've got some here. We've got some here in this church. And some of us have had mothers like this that are described like this. Ruth, in the book of Ruth, is described as a woman of noble character. Some of your translations will have a woman that is worthy, an excellent or worthy wife, who can find? A virtuous woman, the King James says, who can find a virtuous woman? The NIV has a wife of noble character. So all of these ideas capture the root meaning in this word. This is a woman of excellent worth and value, and greatly to be praised. It's interesting that we note at the end of this verse, after he asks this question, he goes on to suggest that there are some women like this around, some wives and mothers like this. And he goes on to end this verse by saying, her worth is far above jewels. Her worth is far above jewels. Literally, she is more valuable than priceless rubies. More valuable than priceless rubies. That's God's estimation of the woman he's about to describe in these verses. Verses 11 and 12 go on. The heart of her husband trusts in her. He will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of his life. The wife of noble character inspires the confidence and trust of her husband. Her careful household management adds to the family's wealth and well-being. She is not contentious and self-seeking, but does her husband good all the days of her life. She is totally committed to the welfare of her husband and to her children. And as verse 15 is going to build on this idea, she is a woman that is self-sacrificing. She is a mother who goes out of the way to take care of the needs of her children, and a wife who does the same for her husband. Point B, the second point, she provides for her household in verses 13 to 15. She looks for wool and flax and works with her hands in delight. She is like a merchant, she is like merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She rises also while it is still night and gives food to her household and portions to her maidens. She's very industrious in that she searches for wool and flax and accomplishes her work with delight. Wool and flax, as it's mentioned here, these are commodities of the ancient Near East. These are commodities that are still sold and grown and sold and traded in the Middle East today. Her hands, as she does her work, bring forth, she does her work with great pleasure, with great delight. That describes a mom to me, with all that you have to do and all you have to put up with. And a special tribute to you working moms that are trying to balance household and kids and husband and work. That is truly a supernatural task. I like verse 14. She is like merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. The point of this simile is that she goes wherever she needs to go, near or far, to gather in all the food and needs to meet her family's likes and bring in special things that they want. Today, I think we would say of this type of a mom, she would no doubt be a coupon snipper. She'd look for the best deals around. She would rush to Consumers, Dillon's, Harder House, Price Cutters, or Sam's Club to look for the best deal. And I don't know about some of you ladies, but Temp would say, forget that coupon snipping and the best deals. You're just eating what I put on the table, right, ladies? And we're happy to get it. We're happy to get it. We aren't going to complain. But if you want to rise to this level of God's praise for you as a mother and wife, then you'll be a coupon snipper and go to all these places to get the good stuff that we like so much. An old, wise old man one time said that the true key to a husband's heart is through his stomach, right? So feed him good and keep him happy, and maybe things will run better around your house. If that doesn't work, send him to see me or Glenn, and we'll get him straightened out. Verse 15, even though this woman is depicted as a wealthy woman over a large household, notice here that she rises up early in the morning before anybody else, and she sees to the needs and management of the household. She is sure that breakfast is being put on, that the servants are working, that everybody's doing their job. She is the manager of this household, and she is praised for that. She rises while it's still night and gives food to her household and portions out to her maidens. Her self-sacrificing attitude is reiterated once again. Jesus repeatedly told his disciples, and I know you'll remember this well, because we mention it a lot around here. Jesus' disciples, every once in a while, Jesus would be walking along and they'd all be right behind him with Peter and John in the lead, and they'd all be arguing in their little circle of 12, the merry band of 12. They'd be arguing when Jesus would stop, Peter and the rest of them, they'd run into him, and he'd spin around, and what had they been arguing about? What were they always arguing about? Who's going to be the greatest when he finally brings in the kingdom? We've got a hard time understanding him, but all the miracles he's doing, he's the king, he's the Messiah, he's going to bring in the kingdom, but I'm sitting on his right-hand side. Oh, no, you're not. They're always fighting about this. And Jesus said to them in Mark 10:45 that the key to true greatness is become the servant of all. Just as the Son of Man did not come down from heaven to be served by y'all, but to be your servant. Go and follow my example. Do you want to be great? Then be like this self-sacrificing woman here who rises up early before sun up and sees to the needs and the management of her household. Even though in this poem, keep in mind, this is a wealthy woman. She's an aristocrat. She doesn't have to be doing any of this. She's got servants to do all this. But she is a godly woman that is praised by God in this poem because she rises up and sees to all of this herself. And that reminds us once again of what Jesus taught. The true key to greatness is self-sacrificial love. Well, number three, point C, she pursues business opportunities, verses 16 and 18. She considers a field and buys it, and then from her earnings she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She senses that her gain is good. Her lamp does not go out at night. Not only does she get up early, she goes to bed late. This is superwoman for sure. And some of you feel that way because that's what's required of you in taking care of your households. These verses 16 through 18 portray the woman of noble character as a shrewd and successful businesswoman. She considers a field. There's a field for sale. She sees it. She considers it. She goes home and digs through her little hideout money, gets out her coffee can, and she sees, do I have enough? I've got enough. So she goes back and negotiate, and she buys it. And then it seems like she sells it or part of it, and from the proceeds, she plants a vineyard in the other part, is what it sounds to me like is happening here. And keep in mind, this is just symbolism. This is poetry to try to depict this woman and all that she does. There's no foolish purchasing or indebtedness here. She doesn't put it on her Visa. She doesn't go to the local bank and get a loan for it. She saves up and she purchases it. We can tell how dated this is, right? I mean, this is from a long, long time ago. Verse 17 literally says that she girds up her loins with strength and makes her arms strong. The virtuous woman is an energetic worker. The girding up of one's garment is an expression for preparation for serious work. In the Eastern culture, the men wore long robes, as the women did, and we are exhorted many times in Proverbs to gird up. What they would do is gather up their garment and they would tie it so their legs would be free to move and not be hindered by the garment so that they could really get to work. And that's what's pictured here, that she girds up. She's getting ready for serious work in what she does. And then verse 18, when it's all been said and done, she sits back and says, Boker Tov, Boker Tov, well done. It is well done. She senses that all of her work and labor has been blessed by God and that it is good. And she doesn't let her lamp go out at night before she sees to all the needs of her household and even in business. Some commentators take this line to be literally, she burns the midnight oil in modern vernacular. She burns the midnight oil, literally working throughout the night if need be to complete a business deal or to complete a garment or to complete something that she's working on. She doesn't let sleep overtake her if she has something to finish. Moms burn the midnight oil when they care for a sick child or a sick husband. We're big babies, aren't we, guys? I see lots of rib punching going on out here. Knock it off, girls. You won't get supper. Today's Mother's Day, so you better be nice. I'm trying to help you out here. Don't kill my good preaching here. We tend to be big babies when we get sick, and some of our kids can be the worst, and moms just patiently are up during the night and laboring with them, and some of us guys, if we have any sense, we get up and help, if you can wake us up out of our coma, right? She provides, number four, point D, she provides for her family and the poor in verses 19 to 22. It says, she stretches out her hands to the distaff and her hands grasp the spindle. Let me just take these verse by verse so that I can break them down a little better. This one always confused me. I thought she stretches out her hands to the distaff. I thought that was somebody with some type of disease. How many of you, don't raise your hands, don't show your ignorance like my own. She raises her hands, stretches out her hands, her arms to the distaff. I thought that's, you know, she's caring for the sick and needy like a nurse or Mother Teresa. But that's not what this word means. Literally, she stretches out her hands on the spindle. The distaff refers to the straight rod which held the raw wool from which she would spin the spindle and take the raw wool off of the distaff stick, which held the raw wool, and as she spun it, she spun the stick, she would spin the finished wool onto her loom. And so this verse is depicting her working with raw wool, spinning out the wool. She stretches out or holds out her hands to the work in order to provide for her family's clothing. I know some of you guys that aren't married, you're looking for a woman like this, right? I mean, she goes out and picks all the stuff. She spins it out and makes it up. Again, this is, I've never heard of a woman like this myself. I mean, I've had some grandmothers that were pretty good, and some of you gals are pretty good, but I don't think anybody can live up to all of this. But you got something to shoot for. Got something to shoot for. Verse 20. She extends her hands to the poor. Here's why in the parallelism of the scriptures, this is why I thought the distaff was some type of diseased or sick person, because the way Hebrew uses parallel. But here in verse 20 now, it's clearly she's stretching out her hands to the poor, and she stretches out her hands to the needy. She meets the needs of both the poor and the needy. Not only does this woman of noble character hold out her hands to work to fulfill all of her family's needs, but she is a charitable woman. She extends her hands to the poor and stretches out her hands to the needy. She literally opens up her hands to help meet the needs of the poor. She gives to the poor with liberality. And there's just something, I don't know about you all, but I know if Temp and I are in the car somewhere and we stop at a light and there's somebody there with a sign, Temp just automatically wants to give them money. No, don't be giving them money. They're probably making more money than we are. There's just something about women are much more nurturing and want to help in this way. Whereas guys, we watched the 60 Minutes special that showed that the guy sitting on the corner with his sign in Dallas, he goes around the corner and gets in his Mercedes and heads for home. We've seen that does happen quite a bit in our affluent society. I don't know if it happens so much anymore, but we really need to be prayerful so that us guys can be more like you gals and be ready. Notice she doesn't just give money to them. She reaches out her hands. She gets involved with them. That sounds like an evangelist to me, someone who's reaching out to help others and meet their needs and get involved with them. But a word of caution here, guys. We like to let the ladies reach out their hands to help the ladies, and the guys help the guys, right? So be careful there with that. Or make sure you got your wife with you if you want to help out, and she'll keep things straight there. Keep it balanced. Verse 21, she is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all of her household are clothed with scarlet. The virtuous woman does not fear the cold, for she provides for her family members with clothing that is both warm and attractive. You can't just pray for God to keep you warm during bad weather. When we first moved here to Missouri, I moved here from San Diego, California. It's always 65, 70 degrees there year-round. It's beautiful. It's nice. We moved back here, and I found out what the problem was with letting your car run out of gas in the middle of the winter, like at 11 at night. And you don't have the jacket, you don't have the blanket and all the stuff you're supposed to have. They tell you on KY3 all the time, keep all these things in your trunk in case you slide off the road. Or didn't know anything about that. So 11 o'clock at night, you slide off the road and you're in a ditch and you got to walk for a number of miles. Nobody will pick you up. You don't have a jacket. You learn that cold weather is dangerous. Here, this lady learned that cold weather is dangerous. You can't just pray for God to provide and help you. You have to be prepared. She was prepared. Her family had the Hebrew word here is literally double cloaks. They had lined cloaks. They had the expensive cloak and garments, but they were lined. They kept them warm. They didn't have to worry in cold weather because she was industrious and she took care of them, so there was no danger. Scarlet. She clothed them with scarlet. Not only was it good looking, but it was warm. It was warm. Verse 22, she makes coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Not only does she see to the needs of her family, she sees to her own appearance by dressing in expensive garments. Garments dyed with purple indicate a person of unusual wealth and high rank. As you all know, the little mussel shell that came out of just a couple places in the Mediterranean Sea, they'd get this little mussel shell, and they have to smash them, and they'd only get a thimble drop of purple dye out of one of those mussels. So you can just imagine the piles of mussel, these little mussels that they had to smash to get this purple dye to dye the garments. It was a big job. And so whenever you read of purple dye or purple fabrics, you're talking expensive, very expensive. But I like this point here that this woman, not only does she work hard, but she's ready and dressed up and ready to go to the opera or out to a movie or something with her husband. Again, superwoman, right? Right, gals? Superwoman. Your husband comes home from work. He had a light day. You've had the kids all day. He says, hey, let's go catch a movie and leave the kids with your mom or my mom, or let's go out. And you're all, you say, what? This is personal experience. This has happened to me sometimes. I don't know about y'all. So she makes coverings for her family, and she makes coverings for herself. Point E, she is a crown upon her husband's head. I thought this was a little bit out of place. Her husband is known in the gate when he sits among the elders. This is all about her. What's he doing in here? What's her husband doing in here? And I had to dig, and came across a couple commentators that helped me with this. See if this makes sense to you. The implication of verse 23 is that the virtuous woman helps advance her husband, who sits among the elders of the land. It could literally be said here that she serves as a crown or an ornament, a jeweled ornament upon her husband's head. So content and happy is her husband at home with his wife and his household that he can go to work, he can go to the city gate among the leaders of the city, and he just shines because his wife is a capable, virtuous, excellent, wonderful wife to him and mother to his children. She serves as a crown upon her husband's head. Verse 24, she makes linen garments and sells them and supplies belts to the traders. As you can see, some of these things are repeated, but it's difficult. Try going with the English alphabet, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and try to write out with this acrostic, try to write out something to go with each of those. That's why we have some of these things repeated, because the Hebrew word that they had to use, they couldn't just put this all together in different headings and work their way through it. But we come across these different ideas repeated in other ways because they're using another letter of the Hebrew alphabet. And that's what we see here. She makes coverings for herself. And then it goes right into, after her husband, verse 24, she makes linen garments and sells them and supplies belts to the tradesmen. So now we got her making, not only taking care of her household, but she's making garments. Linen garments were expensive. They're very cool in the Near East. They're very cool garments to wear. Most dignitaries over there today will wear linen, their garments, their robes are made of linen because the air goes through them and they're very light. You all may have, Pam and Bill, you may have experienced some of that when you went to Africa. Linen is very sought after, but it's expensive. So now she's making linen garments and selling, and belts. Now she's got a leather business going too. My thought on all this is she doing all this herself, or does she got everybody around the house working like eager beavers? When we went to St. Augustine, we went into found an Italian restaurant in Daytona Beach one day, and we went in there, and there was a couple of cute little girls in there, and their English was very broken. They were from Russia. They've got to go to Russia to bring people over here to work because our kids won't work anymore. These two little girls were very industrious. They had to stay busy. They couldn't sit down or stop. When they weren't taking an order or serving you, one of them would go get the mop, and they'd come out and they'd be mopping. They'd be dusting. They'd be cleaning. They were working like crazy. And I asked them, is the fish here fresh? They said, yes, we think it is fresh. And I said, where's the cook? I'm asking the cook. I'm not eating no bad fish. So I went back there and I tried to talk to the cook. And he's Italian. He only speaks Italian. Oh, va bene. Io parlare italiano. So I asked him in Italian, is your fish fresh? And he looked at the boy that was working with him, and he knew first. He said, oh, me no piki English. Me only piki Italian. And I think he probably spoke English just fine. But so then I asked him in Italian, and he sheepishly was looking at the ground, and he turned to the boy and looked at him and then looked back at me, and he said, see, the fish, pesci freschi, freschi. The fish is very fresh. Well, anyway, we ended up eating there. It was fabulous. It was absolutely a fabulous restaurant. But my point in that, before I get lost, see if I can recover, was he kept these girls, they couldn't stop. They worked from the time we got there till the time we left. Those little girls were working, doing something, always doing something. And so my thought is on all of that is this woman to keep everybody working like that, that'd be a real drag to have a woman like that around, wouldn't it, guys? No, I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe we can get more done around the house, right? Verse 24, this woman's industry finds expression once again in her business dealings. She engages in honest trade. In fact, weaving of fine linens was a common trade for women in Israel from antiquity. Some commentators balk at this and say, this woman couldn't be involved in all of this in real estate, buying land, planting vineyards. She couldn't do all of this. Sure she could. Let me give you a couple of examples. Jesus Christ himself wore a very expensive and unique outer garment. You remember his robe? They didn't want to tear it or divide it because it was made of one piece. In order to make a robe, to spin out a robe on the loom that was spun out for Christ, it was totally a miraculous supply by some godly woman that followed after him, because normally they would spin them out. The looms were only this big. And they'd spin them out and they'd have to sew those together. And that's how the garments were made of multi-pieces. That's why they rolled dice for Jesus' garment. That thing was worth some big bucks. Some loving woman, one of those who followed with him, made that or had that made for him on an incredible loom. We can't even imagine the loom that spun that garment out for the Lord Jesus Christ to wear. A gift of love. And some woman, one of those women, his followers, did that for him. The women who followed him, who do you think paid all the bills? Peter and the boys all left the fishing business. Well, they might have got a little money from them once in a while. But who do you think paid and supported Jesus' ministry and the happy 12 that traveled with him and many more on most occasions? Those women that are mentioned that traveled with him, they saw to their needs and supported them and blessed them. So we have women of business means and industry with Jesus Christ that took care of his needs. Another one that comes to mind in the book of Acts, how about Sister Lydia? Wasn't Lydia a seller of purple fabrics? She was a businesswoman. She was from Europe, from Thyatira. She was across the big pond over in Philippi when Paul came there. And Lydia and a few other women were gathered at the river giving praise to God. They were God-fearers. And Paul came and started preaching Christ to them. And what happened? They all got saved. They all accepted Jesus Christ. And Lydia begged them to come with her. And Paul said, no, this won't look right. And she said she would not let up on them. So Paul and his company went to her house, and they provided and took care of their needs. Where do you think the church of Philippi was started? I believe in Lydia's house. Who do you think the major supporter of the church of Philippi was? Lydia. What did she do? She dealt in fabrics. There's just a couple of biblical examples against those who would say that a woman would not be allowed to engage in business in this way, in this culture. That's not true. Point F, she clothes herself with strength and dignity, verses 25 to 27. 25, strength and dignity are her clothing, and she smiles at the future. Lisa, my daughter Lisa, got a hold of this the last few days around the house. She's been saying, I smile at the future. I'm not going to be worried about all that has happened to me. I'm going to smile at the future and embrace it with Christ my Savior. Yes, if that's all I get out of this sermon, that's good enough for me. She smiles at the future. We don't have to worry. Are any of you worried about the economic situation in the United States today? How many of you like paying, I used to pay $30 to fill up my truck, now I'm paying $70. Does anybody like that? What's going to happen to us? They say by the end of the summer it's going to be $8 or $9 a gallon. They've started getting the money from us, and they're going to keep getting the money from us. And you can't blame the fuel companies. They got to pay more for it. Does anybody fear that? Is anybody upset about that? Well, the person who trusts in the Lord can face tomorrow and laugh in joy and not have to worry, because God is in charge. You know, the ones that are really getting hurt, the tuna boats that I used to sail on, we would take 200,000 gallons of diesel fuel. Has anybody got a computer in their head real quick? $5 a gallon times 200,000? How much is that? Is that $1 million, isn't it? How in the world are they going to move those tuna boats around to catch that fish to sell it to you for 79 cents in the can, or you're complaining? I don't know. I don't know where we're going. How are they going to keep the jets up in the air? I'm not flying on one of them new water deal, the hydrogen jets. Forget that until that thing's perfected. But we've got problems coming. Do we have to be fearful as God's kids, as God's people? No. Do we have to live smart? Yes. Do we need to downsize and not have debt? Yes. A lot of things we need to do ourselves, but Christ will give us the ability and help us through these times, I believe. Strength and dignity are her clothing. Strength, moral character, her ethics, they just shine. That's what she's clothed in the righteousness. I believe she is clothed in the righteousness of God. You and I are to be clothed in the righteousness of God. So when people see us, they say, boy, there's something different about that person. And they want to know what it is that makes us different. And they want what we've got. And that's the Lord Jesus Christ. And I think that's what this means here. She smiles at the future. I love that. Verse 26, she opens her mouth in wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is upon her tongue. She is able to impart wisdom to other young women at the park when they're out there with their kids. And, you know, one little kid keeps running up and slapping his mom upside the head. And the godly woman says, why are you letting little Bobby do that to you? Don't let him disrespect you in that. What am I supposed to do? You know, I don't want to. She says, I'll show you what to do. Next time he runs up and does that, you smack him back. Impart some wisdom. That's what you ladies are to be doing, imparting wisdom to one another and helping one another to grow. And she's able to do that because she has learned godly wisdom. Problems with husbands. You know, you ladies are full of wisdom to be able to share with one another. And more importantly, pray together with one another and share our concerns. I want you all praying for me, every last one of you. Verse 27. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. She manages her household well and refuses to eat the bread of idleness. I like that one little boy. Did you see the one before? The one little kid was just cracking up where he couldn't even share what he wanted. Because the one little boy said that his mother's job is to lay around on the couch and watch TV while dad's at work all day. That's eating the bread of idleness. And the one little boy got so tickled when he heard the other one say that that he just started cracking up. He even knew that that wasn't mom's role, didn't he? And the one just sharing, that's what mom does when dad's at work all day. Don't eat the bread of idleness. Be industrious. Be hardworking. Point G, she is praised by her family. Verses 28 and 29. Her children rise up and bless her. Her children rise up and bless her. Her husband also, and praises her, saying, many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. Praise, fellas, is medicine for the soul, isn't it? Don't you like, you guys, if you're at work and you do a job well and the boss praises you for it, or other workers, doesn't that feed your soul? Well, your lady needs that. You mothers need that, don't you? It's medicine to the soul. Be one that praises your wife all the time. Say, well, you don't know my wife, boy. Well, find something to praise her for, and she might begin to change. Praise her. Ask God to help you to praise her every day. don't wait until she's gone to thank her for all that she has done for you. My mom was not a believer, and for 20 years I tried to share Christ with her before her death, and I spent her last week, she's in the hospital dying, and I spent that week at her bedside in San Diego and tried to share with her every time she was conscious. I tried to share Christ with her and just let her know how much I love her, and she just fought it, and I'm so thankful that the last several years of her life I had a card ministry to her. Well, I can't tell her what I want to tell her on the phone. I can send her cards. What's she going to do? Throw them out? Oh, it's from Chuck. Throw it out. I don't want to see it. She's not going to throw it out. She's going to open it up and she's going to read it again. And the last night of her life, my aunt, who was probably the only believer in that family apart from me, she was on one side of the bed and I was on the other. And her and my Aunt Nori, they were friends all their lives. They did things together as we were kids growing up. And Nori said to her, Sally, we would not ever share anything with you that would be hurtful to you, but you're getting ready to go meet God the Creator, and you need to be prepared. Will you not at least consider what Chuck and I have been sharing with you? And finally, it's like God broke through. She shook her head, yes, she would. And a peace came over her. And so I don't know if I'll see her in heaven or not, because the next morning I got there and she had died, right as I got there. But I kept trying. You keep trying. Don't give up. Some others are extremely unreasonable. You keep praying for God's ability to love them and to minister to them. That's our job. No one else can do the job like you can do. Encourage and praise your mothers, for praise is medicine to the soul. And you kids thought I was going to let you young people off, all of you young people. You can be a blessing to your mother. Her children, too, shall rise up and bless her. What greater way to bless your mom than to do what? Be obedient. Oh, I can. I'm a teenager. You don't understand. I was the worst in the world. My mother wore out several belts and poles and you name it. Shockers, anything she could get her hand on for my brother and I. She wore them out on us, but she never gave up. She stayed after us. So you can bring blessing to your mother by obeying her. That's all. This is all just kind of common sense wisdom, isn't it? That's what this book is all about. I love what the husband says to his wife. Many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. That's praise. Your wife will be flying on cloud nine. She'll want to know who you are if you come around quoting, you know, poetic stuff like this to her. But she will eat it up. She'll love it. And try picking up your clothes and helping out around the house more. That's even better. Verse 30. Concluding praises in 30 and 31. And we come back to the theme of this book, closes where it began in verse 30. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Fear of the Lord, F-O-L equals blessing. Fear of the Lord is recognizing Him as the Creator, and with reverential love and respect, trying to get to know Him better and serve Him. And it all begins by receiving Jesus Christ, doesn't it? And how do we learn fear of the Lord? How do we obtain wisdom? Right here. We get it from practical living, daily life, but this book is packed full of it. This little book of Proverbs, 31 chapters. You can read one a day. It's filled with wisdom to live life. I like this, charm is deceitful and beauty is vain. What are most young guys looking for? Barbie. It used to be Barbie. I don't know what it is today. We want the package. You know, we want her beautiful and intelligent. Nowadays, from my understanding, they want them hard working, bringing in more money than they bring in. I mean, they got all kinds of crazy ideas anymore. Wasn't that way when I was a kid. I just wanted to work hard and have a woman I could love and provide for her and have a family. For some, that dates me. I know. That was my ideal. And today, you know, we don't look at or get to know. We have such a hard time telling you young fellas to take your time and date a young lady and really get to know her, know about her, know about her family. What are her beliefs? What's her philosophy of life? Does she know God? Does she want to live her life to serve God, or does she want to run off to Hollywood and become famous? That's what this is talking about. Charm is deceitful. You can be deceived. You aren't really getting to know the person. And beauty is vain, meaning simply that beauty fades. As we get older, it fades. My mother-in-law just showed me a picture of myself in Florida, and I thought, man, who is that? That guy looks way too fat. That was me, you know, just eating all the seafood I could get my hands on. Beauty is vain. Who was it? Somebody said this morning they'd wear a shirt, but their six-pack's turned into a keg. You know, so they're keeping their shirt on. That happens. We age. But the woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. These words, some tell us, could be the husband's, but others believe it is the poet's summation of this work. Physical appearance is not necessarily dismissed. I think we should try to... I've started my walk again yesterday. I walked my 5 miles to the lake and back, and man, I was dying by the time... This morning I got up, I was, after 10 days off, climbing back, going to the lake's not bad, but getting back to the house is another matter. And I can easily drop 10 pounds if I get into shape and quit eating all the good stuff I've been eating. So I'm going to do that. Anybody else on board? No, I know. Stay in shape. Physical appearance is not dismissed in this verse. It simply does not endure as do the qualities that fear of the Lord shall produce. Fear of God, if you want to really go after something and build it up in your life, is what we're exhorted to do. Verse 31, give her the product of her hands and let her works praise her in the gates. The woman of noble character shall exhibit works of godliness that shall bring her praise from the leaders even that gather at the city gates. She will be known in the community not as a loose woman who runs around on her husband, but she will be known as a godly woman who you can go to for practical advice or a new belt or a new garment. She'll make you a deal. I mean, this woman's got it together, and the whole community knows her as God's woman, and they praise her. The book of Proverbs, once again, concludes with an emphasis on the same theme with which it began. What's this book all about? How to obtain wisdom, which it will provide for us fear of the Lord. Chapter 1, verse 7 is the theme of this book. Those who fear the Lord shall be crowned with godly wisdom. Is there anybody here this morning that doesn't want a crown given to you by God for the godly wisdom that he provides? Alan Ross closes with this statement. I like this by Dr. Ross. Here is the foundation of society as Judaism sees it. Over both man and wife stands God, in whose honor these proverbial collections were made and reverently placed into the biblical canon, so that later generations might listen, learn, and live their lives to praise God. What are you living your life for today? Are you living it for the praise of God? Just a couple applications and we'll close. Once again, I've already stated this, but I want you to encourage, go out of here today, pick up a phone. I want you to call and encourage and praise your mothers today, for praise is medicine for her soul. And same thing for you guys, praise your wives. It's medicine for her soul. She needs it. She will thrive on it and save you a bunch of money for marriage counseling. Number two, those who fear the Lord, those who respect and live to bring him glory, shall be crowned with wisdom. Just two simple applications. If you will live to fear God, and this applies to us men, young people, women, all of us, if you will do that, God himself will crown you with glory. He's going to give you a robe of righteousness, which Jesus Christ has purchased for us by his death on the cross. We want to salute you this morning, each of you godly mothers that are here with us today, and I would hope that all of you would be in process of becoming a more godly mother. Would you please stand together with me, and we're going to recite the theme of this particular passage and the theme of the book. We'll recite this together. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears... We aren't doing very good. Let me try again. All right, everybody with me? Okay, here we go. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised.